Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefrey, and this is episode number 272. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank all of our sponsors for being part of the show. It's not possible without them. I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the products, and every single one of our sponsors, I believe in both. So if you're in the market, please reach out to them. If not, just please let them know how much you appreciate them the next time you see them at a conference or something. This week I'm joined by Aaron Feld. He's the head strength coach at the University of Oregon. We bumped into each other a handful of times, but really got a chance to get to know each other a little bit. Most recently at the Colorado State X Lab, where we had him speak and just did a phenomenal job and brought the energy at the end there, man, and appreciated that. So excited to have you on the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
Aaron, you know, you've been, a handful of stops. I mean, not a short career. I mean, I know you've been banging at this for a little bit, but you've been able to climb the ranks really, really quick and go from UAB to Alabama to North Alabama. You're a head strength coach in North Alabama at what age?
27 or 28.
Yeah, I mean, 27 years old. You've been in Georgia most recently, and then obviously the huge opportunity and great job at the University of Oregon there. Which one of those stops along the way really defined you? Where did you feel like you grew up as a strength coach?
I mean, in all honesty, the hardest years of my coaching career were at UAB, not only from a salary standpoint and just trying to survive, but also, you know, it was my first opportunity to coach, my first opportunity to run my own team, first opportunity to really be on the coaching side of a football program. So it really kind of helped me. I always tell my interns, our internship is going to teach you two things. Can you be a strength coach, and do you want to be a strength coach? That was at UAB for me. It taught me that I could do this, and it taught me that no matter how hard it was or how bad it got, like, I wanted to do this. But the moment that really defined me as a coach, I have to say, would be taking over at UNA. I was the first strength coach that they ever had. They had just built a $1 million facility and just kind of handed me the keys to it. And it was humbling and scary at the same time. During my internship at the University of Alabama as an unpaid intern, there was still that creeping shadow of a doubt in the back of my mind. Could I be the director of an entire department? I knew that I could at face value. I knew that I wanted to, but like at the end of the day, there's a lot of unknowns and, you know, can you take the shots? Can you take the blows? Can you handle the unknowns? And, you know, stepping into that facility that didn't have emergency action plans. They didn't have policy and procedure for injuries. They didn't have reporting structure for the head coaches. For, you know, as a head strength coach for 13 sports, it's not like being the head coach for one sport, a head strength coach for one sport. We report to that sport coach and whatever. I was an active department head at 27 years old, having never done that and been able to put those policies and procedures into place, you know, really let me know that no matter where I go and no matter what I do, I can find a way to make it work.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you know, I was a head strength coach in the NFL at 22 and college at 23. And I tell people all the time, you don't really know what it's like to be a strength coach until you sit in the big kid's chair, you know, and have to deal with culture and deal with the administration and deal with coaches' personalities and all those things. And, you know, I mean, we want to complicate and say that the design of the strength program is the hard part, but that's the easy part when it's all said and done.
It's 10% of what we do, man. It's the most important 10%, no doubt, but it's 10% of what we do.
No doubt. Well, you don't get an opportunity to do the things that you've done without making some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and how you've learned from it?
My biggest mistake as a coach to date, and hopefully will never happen again, is trying to coach every kid like they were me. I was a kid that didn't need – to be patted on the back and told I was good or told that I was doing better. I was a kid that you said, you said the truth. You told him when he was doing bad, and you harped on it. And you beat myself up and made sure that I turned into the whatever my coach was looking for, and not everybody's like that. And my way is not the right way as a player. That's just who I was. There's a lot of young men and women out there that need to be need affirmation. They need to know when they're doing it right because they know when they're doing it wrong. They're going to be harder on themselves than anybody could ever be on them. And when you affirm to them that they're doing things the right way, it just it reinforces their behaviors to do it the right way. And it helped me learn to individualize my coaching style. We got our line coach, Alex Mirabal. He finally put something that's in my mind, but I never could put words on it. But he said, I'm going to treat everybody fair, but fair is not the same. Specifically today's youth, but my generation as well. That's not fair. It's not the same. Well, that's fairness is not sameness. And to me, as a coach, for me to be fair is to coach every kid to the best of my ability. And to coach every kid to the best of my ability, by definition, means I have to coach each kid differently because I got to give them whatever they need to be their best. And that was the biggest learning message and tool that's ever been given to me was when, I shut a kid down and came back around to me later and said, man, you don't have to yell at me. You don't have to do that. You just need to tell me what I'm doing wrong. I'll fix it, I promise. And that hit me hard. And really, I mean, for lack of a better way to put it, it hurt my feelings because he was just selling out, right? And he was upset, not by making a mistake, but by how hard I was on him because he's like, that's not necessary. And it really helped me become a much better coach.
Yeah, that's the coach's golden rule, right? I mean, treat them how they want to be treated, not necessarily how you want to be treated. And I think that's, it's something we all go through.
When you're a hard-nosed kid and the coach doesn't have to pat you in the back, you never see the coaches go around behind themselves later in meetings and put their arm around the kid and say, do you understand why I jumped on you in front of everybody?
Right.
And sometimes the answer is, no, sir, I don't.
Right.
And it gives you the opportunity to explain it to them. And if you do that a handful of times, now all of a sudden the kids, they'll listen to you. They want to please the coach in a manner of speaking of doing it the way they want it done, not so much being perfect all the time.
Sure.
And it's just a culture change.
Yeah, absolutely. I know for me, early in my career, one of the hardest things for me to learn is it was really my role outside of just the four walls of the weight room and really having – the importance of building strong relationships with administrators, with coaching staff, with anybody, with the outsiders of the program. Cause you're so focused on what you're doing that it's hard to, you just want things done for you outside without a lot of questions. But I know you've done a lot to really focus on, expanding your role and building great relationships. Why is that so important to you?
Well, I think we all know what a strength coach's role is for the athletes. Their main role is to make athletes bigger, stronger, faster. Okay, that is number one. The side part of that is that's what we have to do. We get to mentor these young men. I'm in football, so I don't have any female athletes right now. We get to mentor these young athletes. We get to be their go-to person when they have issues. We get to teach them life lessons. Like, that's what we get to do, and that's on the athlete side. All right. But to be able to do all of those things, you have to be given the latitude to make decisions and be the administrator of your department. Well, the only way to do that is to build trust with your administrators, to build trust with your sport coaches. Right now, you're hearing a lot of stuff about job security and strength coaches that are beholden to the sport coaches. And it needs to be, they need to have an administrator involved. But at the end of the day, like any job you have a supervisor. And if that supervisor isn't pleased with your work, they replace you. Likewise, right. If the supervisor asks you to do something immoral or the outside of your values or wrong or illegal, it's your responsibility to stand up and say no. So you have to have administrators in place that trust that you're that person.
Right.
If a sport coach comes to you and asks you to perform a workout that you are uncomfortable with or that you feel is wrong, it's your duty to stand up and say that. And in my opinion, if that costs you your job, then you're one of the lucky ones who found out you were at a place you didn't need to be well before things got out of hand.
Right.
To build those relationships with your administrators, you have to spend time with them. I pop over to the administrative offices pretty regularly just to check in with our AD, check in with our associate ADs, Running a weight room, I'm dealing with budgets. I'm dealing with HR. So I spend time with those people. We just did a huge weight room revision. And I spent a lot of time with one of our associate ADs for business and finance. So building these strong relationships. So now when I have an issue where I need a couple extra $1,000 at the end of the year when my budget's out, you know, I've got latitude to work with that because I've built those relationships. So if you stick your head in the sand in your weight room and only do that and yell at everyone that walks in the door, you know, because they got a hat on or because they don't need to be in here, you know, then nobody wants to work with you. And you become this big pit bull, bulldog, bully that nobody wants to deal with.
Yeah, I think that, again, that's, I mean, I wrote a whole book on it, right? You know, technician and manager and entrepreneur, and that management part is probably the toughest part, where you have to manage time, people, and resources. And, you know, the people that we didn't, you know, we didn't go to school for business, and we didn't go to school for finance and all these types of things, you know. And so having to build relationships within the community to learn how to navigate that, it's the way you learn. And that's the way you get things done. And I agree with you completely there.
Well, it's funny you say that. I actually did go to school for business. So I actually do have an undergrad degree in business. So
well, you're the anomaly.
I'm 100% honest with you, man. Like, my time.
I'm sure it comes into handy.
Absolutely. It's 90% of what I do.
Yeah.
You know, business sociology was a course I took in school, and I've used it. I've used what I learned in those courses, I mean, at a fundamental level. Just like you use what you learn in the Strength Essentials book at a fundamental level. You use all those things. You know, power exercises before strength, before, you know, isolate. You know, it's big picture stuff that you learn in the books, and then you put the book on the shelf, and then you go practice. It's the same thing with that, and it's really served me quite well. You know, understanding organizational hierarchy and structure, understanding, you know, chain of command, like, those things matter. And if I take everything directly to the head coach instead of to the department head that it matters, then I'm not only am I slowing down the head coach, but I'm bringing a bunch of negative stuff to light that could be handled within a department and never has to be an actual issue.
Right. You know, when you presented out in Colorado State, you did a fantastic job out there. You talked about a little bit about positive language and working with your athletes and making sure that you're using affirmations and positive language and those types of things. And, you know, I think we're all guilty of having emotions come into the, you know, we're all type A personalities. We all let emotions get the best of us sometimes. When you're dealing with 17 to 22 year old men, you know, it's easy in a high charge environment. It's easy to go after them sometimes. What kind of forced you to kind of make sure that you're using positive language, and what are some of the tactics that you use to make sure that you keep yourself from letting your emotions get the best of you?
I've spent a little bit of time with several sports psychologists. With my time at Georgia, we used a few different guys and spent time out out with these guys, doing workshop with these psychologists and learning some things. And one of the biggest things that I learned, your brain, okay, your mind cannot tell the difference between a vividly imagined, all right, scenario infused with emotion. So if I'm sitting in my room the night before the game and I'm visualizing the game, I'm visualizing the crowd noise, I'm visualizing the smell of the grass, my hand in the grass, you know, it's raining. I hear the rain on my helmet. I feel the rain on my shoulder pads, and I'm getting anxious. I'm getting nervous. My heart's racing, and I'm thinking about, you know, club rip for a sec. Your brain can't tell the difference between that and you actually doing it, right? So in essence, when they talk about taking mental reps, that's what they're talking about. Repetition, repetition, repetition to make – you can form habits without ever having actually physically done something in a perfect world. So that being said, I took that concept and you look at it. If I say, hey, get your hands off your knees, what's the first thing you think about? Think about your hands on your knees.
Right.
So now I'm reinforcing in your mind an image of my hands being on my knees in a stance. So instead of saying hands off, don't put your hands on your knees, I say hands at the ready. And that's what we only say. Now, whenever a guy bends over, whenever a guy's popping down into a ready position, we never say, don't put your hands on your knees or keep your hands off your knees. It's always hands at the ready. All right. We don't say foot off the line, because to get your foot off the line, you have to imagine your foot being on the line, because the way your brain works is your brain visualizes what you're doing and then does it. So to tell yourself to get your foot off the line, I have to first visualize my foot on it and then move it. But if I say feet behind the line, I visualize my feet being behind the line, and no matter where my feet are, I take them to that position. So you're reinforcing the idea of what you want them to do versus reinforcing the idea of what you don't want them to do. And it becomes a very, very powerful tool. The negative vernacular is just like a false step. If I'm a wide receiver, no matter how fast you step backwards to go, it can be super explosive. You're still not going anywhere. And although your first step forward may be slower if you don't take a false step, you're not wasting the time going backwards, and it's something that can be improved upon. So you take that physical concept and apply it to a mental aspect of positive vernacular, positive language, and coaching, and all of a sudden you have guys skipping the middleman. They skip visualizing what they're not supposed to be doing, and they go straight to where they are supposed to be. And over time, it actually increases, theoretically, in my opinion, their rate of play.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like that. You know, when you're dealing with, you're dealing specifically with football, which is, at the BCS level anymore, it's there's so many rules and there's so much input by the coaches. And it seems like that's always being tinkered with a little bit. With the amount of influence now and the amount of time that's taken away from those 8 hours that goes to the football coaches, the 20 hours during the season, how do you balance being able to get the work in that you need to get done with, the sport requirements or what they feel is needed for skill acquisition?
I'm very fortunate. Our head coach, Mario Cristobal, is a firm, true believer in it. Not above all else, but in conjunction with football. So when I bring our athletes in here and I point to the weight room, I said, look, you got the best weight room in college sports right here, college football right here. It's the best of the best. But guess what? This is not a weight room. This is a football field. Everything we do is geared towards making them a better football player. Coach Chris Ball understands that. I understand that. Our players understand that. So our skill acquisition that you're talking about happens seamlessly between the weight room and the football field. Punch pads, we have ladders, we have all kinds of stuff. We essentially can do very, very similar. And when I say an indie drill, now they do football indie drills and pads, but we can break those indie drills into fundamental basic movements so that when they go out to do indie, they accidentally do the movement patterns correctly because they've repetitioned it in the weight room over and over and over. Now, you take that concept and you have a coach who gets it. Coach Chris Ball allows me, we trained all through spring ball. And I told him, when they come back from break and we lift, we pick up not where we left off, but where we should be had they trained on their week they were gone, their 2 weeks that they were off, that's where we're going to start. So you're going to have 20 to 30% of the guys that didn't do what they were asked to do, and they're going to be very sore, and they're going to be tired, and they're going to be gassed, right. And it may affect practice. And he says, that's okay. They need to learn that you have to do what you're supposed to do when it's discretionary. And that's what we've done. Obviously, within, this is my workout within what I believe is safety. You got to always coach with your eyes if you see an issue, because I personally don't believe that mental toughness is surviving any one workout.
Right.
Mental toughness is sustaining performance over an entire competitive calendar. Dedication, focus, and performance. So if a guy has a bad day or, he's struggling, let you pull him, you evaluate him, you deal with it, because missing that one practice is not a big deal. But if that guy on average does that, they'll never make it in this game. And you have to coach that. But with I'm digressing, but with the practice schedule and the NCAA mandatory discretionary weeks and all that stuff, you have these elevated, expectations from a sports performance standpoint, and you have a minimized training calendar.
Right.
And if you get a situation that's not as ideal as mine is with a coach that really allows me some latitude to train when we're playing football, you get yourself in trouble. Right. Get yourself into a 7 weeks. You've got 7 weeks to prepare for spring ball. I got 6.5 weeks to prepare for the season. I only have our freshmen for 4 weeks before training camp starts. So you get in these circumstances, situations where, in my humble opinion, the bylaws are putting these kids at risk by minimizing the amount of time they have to train.
Right.
But that's where my education, my certification, my experience, and other strength coaches around that I lean on. You have to be willing to stand up and say what you think. It is your duty and responsibility as a strength coach to have your opinion heard. And if the coaches decide to disregard your opinion, that's their right.
but you have an obligation as a strength coach to make sure every single person in the administration and coaching staff hears your opinion when you think things are unsafe or inappropriate. And if you have a good working relationship with the administration and the coaches, it gives you the opportunity to educate them as to why you feel this way. And if you don't have the relationship with your head coach to have those conversations, or you don't have the courage to speak up and say it, that's where the breakdown is. It's not the football coach's responsibility to know what practice loads are appropriate or not. That's the sports science and the strength coaches and the athletic trainer's responsibility.
Right.
We as a performance staff must be knowledgeable as far as what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. What up? I'm sorry, I got players walking through my way room. You have to be knowledgeable and understand, you know, what's going on, but you also have to be willing to speak up. And again, I said this earlier, and I don't want to harp on it, but if we as coaches are more concerned with job security than speaking up and doing what is appropriate and right, then we're in the wrong business. I got in this business because my strength coaches in college, you know, they helped me through everything, through back issues, through girlfriend problems, everything you can imagine. Those are the guys that were there for me and helped me graduate college and have success. I want to be that for these guys, and I can't do that if I'm more concerned with whether or not I'm going to have a job at the end of the season.
Agreed. You know, one of the things I've always respected about you is that you've throughout your time in strength conditioning, you've never been one that's kind of followed anybody. You've kind of set your own path. You've been your own guy. You have your own personality, and I think you've had a great balance of maintaining a personal brand versus like being like self-promoting, right? You know, you're a guy that's active on social media. Those types of things. What do you say to the people, the strength coaches out there that don't understand the importance of meeting the athletes where they are, be it on social media or wherever else, having a way to stand out and differentiate yourself in a crowded space, you know, and just don't understand that aspect of the game, I guess.
My big thing that I would say is, as strength coaches, we pride ourselves on always being a student, always learning, always growing. To those out there who are slapping a clown logo on those of us that are out there on social media having fun and inspiring our athletes and meeting recruits in their own turf, I would say continue to be a student and continue to learn. Instead of putting other people in the business down, you know, reach out to those people and ask. You know, if someone genuinely believes that I'm hurting this industry or hurting this business, I would hope that they would reach out to me personally and say, hey, this is what I think, and give me the opportunity to say, well, here's what I think. Because if we're constantly students, man, I go to these conferences and I love the breakout sessions. I love learning stuff. But you know where I get most of it done is at breakfast and lunch. Man, this last conference, man, we had lunch with, it was like seven major strength coaches. And we were there for 4 hours just talking about issues, talking about programming, talking about relating to your players. And social media is one of those things we talked about. And, you know, I've had recruits come in that I've never met because I'm the back end of recruiting you. That come in and they come find me, they high five me, hug me, and I'm so glad to finally meet you. And it's such a huge advantage in recruiting for these recruits to know who I am.
Right.
But at the same time, it gives us tons of stuff to talk about. It really improves, you know, the recruiting experience. And now I'm following these kids and I get to, you know, they're communicating with me legally through NCAA, rules. Because they're not even talking directly to me. They're just putting stuff out that I'm seeing. I'm putting stuff out that they're seeing, and we're having an ongoing conversation nonstop.
Right.
But that's just one piece. The other piece is the kids on your team now. Dude, my guys love going back to their hometowns and talking trash to their friends that play at other schools. Say my strength coach would destroy your strength coach. And if their friends aren't saying the same thing back to them, then I feel bad for their buddies. Because your strength coach has to be that awkward dad, you know, the one you're proud of, but simultaneously kind of embarrassed of when you see him in public with your buddies. Like, that's what I'm going for, man. I want these guys to be proud of me, and I want them to be excited to be around me. But also, you know, I'm not their friend. I'm not their buddy. You know, I'm hopefully their mentor. I'm hopefully their coach. And I want them to like me. But at the end of the day, being liked is not the issue. Being respected, right? That's what you want from your players.
Right.
And meet them on their home turf on social And to, you know, to talk the language that they talk is a great way to get these guys to respect you and understand you.
Yeah, I think it's one thing. It's something I agree with 100%. And, you know, I think it's important as coaches that we have an understanding of, you know, there is an element of having an individual brand, you know, and it's not always, you know, who you know. It's sometimes who knows you that really allows you to get the opportunity to make that impact on the young people's lives, which is ultimately why we all do what we do. And if you don't play that game, then you're not going to have the opportunity to do that. And if you do get the opportunity to do it and you're only you have no substance, then you're going to fail, you know. But the ones that do both rise to the top, you know. And I think that that's ultimately why you've gotten an opportunity, you know, the opportunities that you've had. There's other people in this profession that have gotten the opportunities they have, and it's important that you have to have that substance. You have to be the great strength coach, but you also have to have be given that opportunity. And there's just so many of us that you have to stand out in the crowded space. And I think that you've done that masterfully throughout your career.
At the end of the day, we spend too many hours here to not have fun.
Oh yeah, totally. Totally.
And if you're 90, look, I'm a cartoon character on Twitter. I get it. That's on purpose. You know, 9 times out of 10, the stuff we put out there is just stuff that we're just playing around, man. We're having
a staff meeting. You're like, let's do this.
or you know, you get challenged to do stuff by your players. Or, you know, your strength coach reach out to you and say, you know, bench press competition ? You're like, sure, why not?
Right.
Like that, and you know, you build a brand, like you said, but you know, there's a fine line between self promotion and branding. And yeah, at the end of the day, it's kind of the same thing, but it's all about your aim and what your goals are. You know.
Well, it's all about substance. You gotta be able to back it up, you know. And I think that you know, again, I mean, you do a great job of that as well. You know, we end the show with some resources, Aaron. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
Best piece of coaching advice that I ever received was, if you stop getting better, you stop being good. No matter how good you are, if you quit growing, and you're going to get passed. I was the type of person, I didn't like to read. And I love to read like science fiction and like get out of the world. That was like watching TV for me a long time ago. I didn't like to read real stuff. Like, you know, reading the essentials book was one of the most excruciating things I've ever done in my life. Studying for the tests and stuff like that. Like it was hard for me, but now that I've gotten older and more experienced, I read Jim Wendler's 5-3-1. Now, granted, it's like a picture book when it comes to books, but I read Jim Wendler's 5-3-1, and it's one of those deals where it was written so masterfully from the point of know what's important and then just train.
Yeah.
Right. And so I didn't like to read, and I had to learn that, you know, you have to do it. So I, you know, put a timer, and this is part of the coaching advice I received: 20 minutes. Set aside 20 minutes a day and read something.
Yep.
Whether I use that as my Devo time, or I use that to read something to learn and grow and get better at this craft, 20 minutes a day. I don't get it done every day. I'd be lying if I said I did. But I shoot for that every day, to spend at least 20 minutes reading something to get better at strength and conditioning.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, in that light, then, give us, I mean, I know you've already mentioned 5-3-1, but give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
I will tell you, app standpoint, Twitter. Twitter and Instagram, obviously, I get more feedback from fans, from other strength coaches, and from just the general public. And honestly, the haters, the negativity, I love it. I absolutely love it. Because when you strike a nerve, it's like when your players walk in the weight room, they look at you like, you're looking kind of small today, Coach Feld. That's usually on a day where I'm feeling particularly swole. When I'm feeling real good about myself, that's when they'll hit me with it. So, you know, it reminds me that they think the same thing. So I know when I put out something that's particularly fun or particularly aggressive or just, you know, interesting, because I get so much more negativity off of it. And, you know, negativity is so powerful, and it can drag you down. It can drown you. But if you learn how to manage it, it can really be a force for positive. And, you know, a lot of the positive energy I put out into my athletes is my way of dispersing that negative energy. It's been a really useful tool. Book, if you haven't read Dan John's Easy Strength, And again, I will tell you honestly, I have not read the whole thing. So you guys don't roast me on Twitter because I haven't read the whole book and I'm recommending it. Easy Strength is awesome. Just from the base, from the long first couple chapters talking about the entire spectrum of sports specificity and general practice and all this other stuff, unbelievable amount of knowledge. But what I really took out of it is the concept of accumulated load. And I don't even remember if that's how he words it, but that's how I've coined it, is accumulated load. And my entire program, before I even read this book, is based on accumulated load. You know, if you accumulate enough load, then you'll be able to accumulate more load. But you know, if you're over time, your loads are low, then you try to ramp it up. That's where injuries occur. That's where illness occurs. And so this book really kind of helps shape, officially shape the terminology, the vernacular, and the things that I use in my programming as I've kind of matured in my coaching, you know, using the experience of these guys to really put stuff into writing and in words and in policy and procedure. So that's been really helpful. Now, as far as a website, I'll be honest with you, I don't spend a lot of time on, outside of Instagram and Twitter, I don't spend much time online. I don't really have time to surf the web and read all these articles. And every now and again, somebody will send me something. And I try to read, especially if my AD sends me something or a colleague sends me something, I'll try to read an article. But as far as like searching through databases or, you know, strength performance or any of those things, like I just don't have the time to shop. You sure. know, I have to go buy something, you know. So that's what I try to stick to.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. I think, and it's easier with Instagram and Twitter to kind of aggregate that information too. I mean, you'll see a link every once in a while and you'll click that just because it's been brought to your attention, I would assume as well. But man, I appreciate you doing this. Like I said earlier, I think, you know, it's easier for people to maybe get on Instagram and see Phil the sleeves and the mustache and be able to, and say, hey, who's this guy? Or who's this guy, you know, think he is or whatever. But I think if you've ever been in coaching, especially at the highest levels, I think everybody has to have, kind of a persona. I think it's like, for me, there's a big difference between Coach Mack and Ron McKeefrey. I mean, they're two totally different guys. And you do that purposefully, not just from a way to brand or stand out or do things like that, although that helps. But you do that also so that you can take off Coach Mack when you walk into the door at home and be Ron McKeefrey and check it at the door. And so I think that, you know, you've done, you know, getting to know you. There's a big difference between Aaron and, you know, Coach Feld. And I appreciate that, man. I appreciate what you do.
Well, you know, the inspiration for my cartoon character is White Goodman from Dodgeball, obviously. Max Kwando from Napoleon Dynamite. It really has made it really easy to flip back and forth, especially when I can walk off the weight room floor into my office with a kid who's got an issue, and I can switch it off immediately. And my players do. They know the difference between Coach Feld and me. You know, I'm always Coach Feld in name to them, but they know the difference between me out on the weight room floor in practice and me here. Anytime they come to my office is the most calm place that there is, which is why I'm having this interview in here, because it's the only place that I can talk at a normal volume. it's a real thing, man. I walk outside of this office and it just feed off the energy of the room. And that's one of the things that I want to encourage every strength coach out there. I want you to take a deep breath every time you walk out of your office and focus on being positive with your athletes, with your coaches, with your administrators, with other coaches that you disagree with. Because I think strength and conditioning professionals are one of the few professions in the world none of us are willing to compromise our morals about, no matter what. I can't walk by a piece of trash on the sidewalk without turning around and picking it up. I can't do it, especially not when I'm on this campus. All right, I can't watch a kid do a power clean wrong and not coach him. No matter how tired I am, no matter what lift group we're on, I have to. From the newest walk-on to the oldest senior, you have to. And so I challenge all the strength coaches out there, have that same mentality about other strength coaches. If you see something wrong, contact them, communicate with them. Let's stop the public burning at the stake. Let's stop the public debate over where this business is going And let's spend time together talking about the future of our business and our industry, how we can improve it, and instead of airing our negativity and our dirty laundry on the internet, let's come together, figure out what we need to do to improve this thing and do it the right way. Because I promise you that the power of positivity, even though it's not as powerful as any individual negativity, the power of positivity in the end will overcome, because there's more of us out there that want to do this the right way and be positive than are there out there that want to be negative.
Yeah, that's a great message. Great message, a good one to end on, man. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, Coach. I appreciate you.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.